Hey, Alex.
Elliot, mate. How's it going?
Good, good, good. Now, this is one of our Pulse episodes focused on recent news in legal tech and the legal tech and legal ops industry. Before we get into that, happy anniversary, Alex.
Happy second year anniversary.
I know. So our first ever episode, we actually mentioned this on our 1 year anniversary last year. Our first ever episode was published on 15th of October 2019, and we are recording this episode on the 12th of October. Won't go out on the 12th, but on the 12th of October. So happy anniversary. Now, we are going to, we are planning to do a year-end kind of wrap-up show, so we're going to save the sort of reminiscing to that episode, I think.
Yeah, looking forward to that. It's going to be good.
Yeah, it will be. Cool. All right, well, let's just get into some news. The first news we've got is some recent, couple of recent acquisitions. So the first one to mention here is Onnit. Onnit has acquired Bodala. You think it's Bodala?
Yeah, yeah. That's we always try butcher some of these pronunciations, but that looks right to me. No, I think you did good. I think you did good.
Oh, thanks. Yep. Thanks. Yeah, butcher away. Yeah, so I wasn't able to find the purchase price online, but look, Onnit. Yeah, I know. Yeah. So Onnit, probably best known for having a legal matter management platform. They do other things. So they do something that they refer to as enterprise legal management, which includes e-billing and vendor management. Bodala, on the other hand, they do, as far as I can tell anyway, they do legal spend analytics. As you can tell, I don't know their service that well myself. And so I think they're sort of looking at legal spend data and analyzing it to look at things like, you know, where are you spending your money, with which firms, are you paying too much, could you bring some of it in-house, all that kind of stuff. And it looks to me like Bodala don't do e-billing. So they don't do the sort of collection of data part of it. They focus on the analytics part. Do you have any knowledge of the company, Alex?
No, I haven't worked directly with them, but from looking at that article, I think they're very similar to other solutions like Brightflag. Although Brightflag is kind of an end-to-end solution that does capture the data, this, like you said, is more about analyzing that data. So perhaps Onnit as the system will collect that information. As far as I understand, they do that, but it's just leveraging, I guess, the way in which they're able to visualize that data and I guess all of the stuff they've learned from working with different customers. So it makes sense that this kind of acquisition would happen.
Yeah. And I think if Onnit, you know, feels that they need to improve their own spend analytics offering, well, obviously this helps them. Mm. Their CEO, Eric Elfman, was talking about how Onnit plans to make multiple acquisitions a year in part to sort of keep his organization sort of young and innovative. So it's an interesting strategy. And they have said that Bodala will continue to operate as a standalone business. They're not going to sort of stop it from being able to integrate with other legal matter management tools. So, yeah, so there you go. So watch this space.
Yeah, I think just on that point, I think you said just stop from being complacent, I think the word was, or mediocrity. So his goal is to starve off the kind of mediocrity that he believes that can descend on providers that have been around for a while. So some of those tech providers out there that aren't acquiring anything and sitting around, you know, well, that's becoming the mediocrity. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right. All right. Well, then we should talk about another acquisition. So, you know, if someone's acquiring, they're not mediocre, obviously. So the next one here is Clio. So Clio has acquired a document assembly company called Lawyaw. Do you think I'm pronouncing that correctly? L-A-W-Y-A-W?
Is it supposed to be like lawyer, but like a different spelling? Like lawyer.
I'm just gonna sit here until you keep trying.
it sounds like that, almost like a twang, law yo.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, whatever you think.
Continue. So again, couldn't find a purchase price. So Clio provides SaaS software focused very much on law firms. They cover sort of client management, matter management, billing, and a whole lot more stuff than that. Lawyaw, they came out of Y Combinator, the sort of startup incubator, I'm pretty sure based in San Francisco, in 2018. They've got a document production tool, so it's like a document sort of automation tool that, you know, you can complete fields and get it to pull information out of other systems to generate documents. And from my reading, Clio and Lawyer were already pretty well integrated. So you could log in, for example, into Lawyer using your Clio login credentials. Lawyer was already able to pull data from Clio to generate documents, and Lawyer was already in the Clio app store. So yeah, there wasn't a lot of detail in the article I read about exactly what they've got in mind strategically for the acquisition. So I'm assuming that, you know, they just see there being benefits to integrating the two companies. Perhaps, there's a feeling that for Clio, they needed to uplift their existing automation capability, and to acquire it was easier than building it. Just guessing.
Yeah, well, it could be also just joining the two workforces so it's more cohesive. It could be sharing customers. I don't know, it could be a range of things. But, I mean, Clio is a massive player in the law firm tech space, so it makes sense that it'd make this kind of acquisition.
Yep, absolutely. Cool. All right. Well, let's transition from acquisitions to capital raisings. Mm. The one I want to talk about here is Microsoft's M12 venture fund, together with another venture fund called CRE. They've co-led a £2.2 million British pound investment in Definely. And they've described it as a seed plus round. And the reason for that is that Definely had previously raised a seed round of 1.2 million British pounds. So this is like a kind of a seed round mark two. Definely has been part of Alan Overy's Fuse incubator. Interestingly, I think I saw a demo of Definely when I was in London a couple of years ago. And if I've got the offering right, what they have is a pretty simple Word plugin, which basically shows you the definitions for a sort of contract or other document in a sidebar when you're editing the document itself in Word. And I do think that's pretty simple, but also pretty powerful. And if you think about, you know, the sort of current world where so many more people are working from home and working purely from their devices than they used to, I think it has some real power there. I mean, to give you an example, when I previously was sort of drafting and negotiating long contracts, I would always have the contract open on the screen, and then also I'd have a printed version of it on the page. And that was mainly so that I could sort of orient myself in the agreement and then flick around easily to see the different parts of the document. When you're working purely electronically, that's just so much harder, you know, jumping from sort of page 3 where the definitions might be to page 60 where some clause might be. So having the definitions in a sidebar seems to me to be a pretty simple thing, pretty powerful thing. So good on them. You know, from the perspective of sort of Microsoft, why did they decide to invest? I mean, again, the article I read didn't have a lot of detail on that, but perhaps Microsoft sees Definely as being maybe an optional sort of integration into Word, an add-on to Word, or maybe they just think it's a good investment. I don't know, but pretty interesting product.
I mean, if it's £2.2 million, like, couldn't Microsoft just build it themselves? Like, I mean, I don't know the product in detail, and I don't know how much dev has gone into the background of it, but I mean, for $2.2 million and they've re-raised, we'll just say £1.2 million, mm-hmm. another seed round, we have to think it's probably a little bit deeper than that. But it's interesting to see Microsoft's venture fund, I guess fund technology that could ultimately compete for plugins that they could, I guess, build themselves. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe their direction is not to build. Maybe it's to let the market build and then just buy and acquire. So
A couple things I'd say to that. An organization of the scale of Microsoft, it's quite possible that they actually couldn't build something like that for that kind of price. You know, I think in a large organization like that, doing any kind of development is very expensive by the time you have all of your control systems run over it. So I don't know. I'm not 100% sure that they would be able to build something for a price that's lower than that. But I do think the other possibility here is they just think it's a good investment. You know, like, maybe they can sort of invest £2.2 million now and one day it'll be worth a lot more. And if that's what the point of that fund is, to actually make a return on that investment, and it's part of their sort of capital structure, then it makes sense.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. All right, let's move on to some other stuff. So first thing to mention here is an article in legaltechnology.com entitled What's Hot and Not in 2021. So it's written by Caroline Hill, the chief editor of that publication. And she talks about a whole lot of sort of issues or things that have been hot in her view throughout 2021 in the legal tech space, and a couple of things that she thinks have not been hot throughout 2021. So we'll just touch on them briefly here. So the first thing that she says has been hot is Microsoft. And the sort of quote she mentions is that previously many law firms, it's quite law firm focused, many law firms were talking about whether or not they'll use the sort of Office 365 suite at all, to now the main conversation is not whether or not they'll use it, but more, yes, they're going to use it, but how much are they going to use it? So, you know, there's been a sort of a shift in the thinking around O365 in particular. Also, a bit of discussion about MS Teams, and I think, you know, this feels to me like it's very kind of pandemic-related. Teams obviously became very popular over the last, what, year or two. It was helped along to some extent by Zoom and their security concerns back in, what was it, sort of March, April in 2020, I think. So yeah, you know, you can sort of see how Zoom, MS Teams, I should say, has really sort of taken off as a internal collaboration platform, external collaboration platform, and to some extent, you know, obviously does more than just that. So that's the first one.
Well, just on that point, I was thinking when I read this as well, it is very law firm focused, but I mean, a lot of this has application to in-house as well, because I mean, Microsoft has been rolled out in a lot of organizations, and I think a lot of organizations have pushed it towards their functions to try to figure out the best way of using it. And there is no kind of magic bullet to an organization how they use 365. And I think it's developed intentionally for that. Each of the functions or each of the business units within an organization will kind of use it slightly differently. And a lot of the conversations I've been having probably over the last 18 months is around, like, how do we leverage our existing technology? Because, you know, there's a bunch of use cases that people are looking to solve, but then don't have the budget because of the pandemic, right? And they're not increasing their budget, they're decreasing their budget. And you know, they're looking to try solve these known pain points with the technology they currently have. So in a way, it's kind of forced them to use the technology that exists, which in their case is 365 in a lot of the cases. So I can definitely see that it's not hot because it's sexy, if you can call legal tech sexy, but it's hot because of necessity. And, you know, thinking of, you know, video calling, which is an obvious one, which you just spoke about, but more things like around like Microsoft Planner for kind of workforce management, or Microsoft Power Automate, which is really cool to automate some of your kind of, I guess, standardized processes, a thing of like your RBA. And then things like Power BI as well for analytics and stuff. So it's kind of like leveraging what you currently have. So I definitely think that's hot, but like I said, not because it's sexy, but because it's necessary.
Well, also Microsoft have invested quite a lot in Teams over the last couple of years. We've talked about it a few times, that the actual functionality has been growing. And my own view is it's quite nice to use. So would I say it's hot? I don't know, but I mean, it is nice, which to be honest, which, you know, if we're honest, is itself somewhat of a hurdle in the corporate context quite often.
Well, I think at least some of the teams that I've been working with over the last 2 years, it has probably been less Teams, because a lot of the organizations have things like WebEx or Zoom or Google and those kind of things. So it's been less about kind of video calling, but more about some of their smarter platforms that they have. So Power Automate, which I just spoke about, but also the Power Platform. Gee, say that a few times. Which allows people to kind of build these custom applications on like a bit of a canvas, which is very, very cool. Again, it's like that ability to solve your own problems using your existing technology kind of gives you all the tools that you need to kind of build really whatever your imagination can come up with. So I think, it's more about these more sophisticated tools that Microsoft have invested heavily in. Because I remember using the Power Platform probably 3 years ago, and I think it was like pretty cool back then, but now it's really surpassed my expectations. It's a very cool product. Not sponsored by Microsoft, but just saying. I've been playing around with it for quite a long time now, and I can see that a lot of organizations are looking to it, particularly in-house legal teams.
Yeah, but if Microsoft do want to sponsor, they know what it is.
Yeah, just hit us up.
All right, so that was a lot of time on Microsoft Teams. So we'll go through the others quite quickly. So the next one here is platformization. Mm. And here the sort of point is that, you know, there's a bunch of point solutions in the market. A number of them have been acquired or emerging to form part of a sort of more diverse offering. The example given there is Lettera, which I think we talked about a few episodes ago. You know, they've acquired DocsCorp and Kira Systems more recently. So that's another point. We'll come back to point solutions, by the way, because that they also show up in the not hot section.
Just on that one. I was just thinking, I mean, we just talked about it. There's Onnit, which are buying a bunch of solutions to become more of a platform. There is Clio, again, which we just spoken about, which again is becoming more of a platform. Some of these bigger players that are absorbing some of these smaller ones, like Ironclad mm-hmm. are becoming more of a platform. Like they acquired PackSafe. So like a lot of these bigger companies are moving towards that. So I definitely agree with her point on platformization. How did you say it?
Platformization.
Okay.
Yeah, that. Right. Okay. Next one. Right. The rise of the marketplace. So this is the idea of creating a sort of a market, like a sort of an app store, but for legal solutions. And the example given here is Rain and Court, which I think, I haven't used it, but I think it already aims to do just that. There are some other examples. I'm personally not aware of this being a sort of a big growing space, but I can see real. I can see real prospects for it.
Yeah, I agree. I haven't seen it though. It sounds definitely cool. It sounds hot, but I just haven't seen it in the corporate legal department context. Not yet.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed. Okay. And then the next one here is buy or build, and it's not so much that buy or build is either one of them is winning out. It's more just that the issue itself is being actively sort of debated. And you know, on the buy side, you've got firms saying things like, so again, it's a law firm focus. You got firms saying things like, well, we're a law firm. We don't have any specialization in technology, so that means we should buy rather than build. But on the build side, you've got firms saying, well, actually, we think we should build out a development team because that way we can build the software that we actually need and we can also leverage competitive advantage when we do so. So,
Well, Well, in the in-house environment, I mean, that comes up all the time, but I don't know if you consider build to be, say, configure. So if I take the situation of, say, continuing to use an enterprise solution like 365, but then just optimizing the way in which you use that specifically for an in-house legal team, like I think a lot of the legal teams are probably thinking that as build, but it's more of a configure, I would say. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think that comment around the law firm build is really actually setting up a dev team and actually building tech from scratch. So I think whilst I agree that there has been many conversations about do we buy, build, partner, bend, like all those kind of things, I think there are different contexts for each of the, like I said, in-house or law firm.
Yeah, I agree. Yep. Okay. Next issue that she mentions is tech captives. So this is the idea that if you're a law firm and you want to have some kind of innovation arm, or maybe it's a sort of an incubator, can you actually do that as part of the partnership of the law firm, or do you need to establish a standalone entity? Maybe it's fully owned, but it probably is fully owned, but do you need this kind of standalone entity that has its own operating model and isn't weighed down by the need to sort of run decisions past the partnership? And again, the article doesn't sort of land on one side or the other, but she does cite sort of differing examples. On the one hand, you've got a firm called Reed Smith, UK firm, I think, which created a tech captive called Gravity Stack. So that is like a sort of a standalone, fully owned entity. On the other hand, you've got Clifford Chance, which had its own sort of standalone entity called Applied Solutions, but they over the last year have actually been bringing certain aspects of that back into the firm. So you seem to have examples going in both directions. See if you've got any comments before I move on.
No comments on that.
Didn't think so. And look, the last one here is funding and investment in legal tech. So the point made here is that in 2021 so far, almost as much has been invested in legal tech as in all of 2019 and 2020 combined. So obviously that's pretty huge. I think you've got a figure, don't you?
Yeah, just over $4 billion as of August. So we're not even at the end of the year. And like you said, there's been more investment in legal tech in 2019 and 2020 in 2021 than there was in 2019 and 2020 combined, which at the moment is just over $4.16 billion, which is just a massive number. It's like a bubble, and you're thinking like, when is it gonna burst? But big number.
Yeah, absolutely. And big valuations too, which I think we've talked about previously.
Yeah, a few unicorns,
Yeah, and the other thing that's cited in the article, which I think is a good point, is that we've seen some IPOs this year. So the examples given are Intapp, Disco, and LegalZoom. And the reason that's interesting is that that's kind of the next stage of the investment cycle. Like, that's the exit, right? So, you're seeing some of that in the legal tech space as well.
Very cool.
Yeah. Now on the not hot side of things, it's interesting. We had about eight things or so on the hot. We've got two on the not hot.
I got a few to add to this. So,
all right. So one of the not hots, according to Caroline Hill, is a million different point solutions, which I think is true. Totally. We've talked about it on the podcast before. And then the other one, which we've also talked about before, is blockchain. And she actually cites the Gartner hype cycle, which you and I spoke about a few episodes ago, showing that blockchain is at the bottom of the trough of disillusionment. So there you go. What have you got to add, Alex?
Yeah. Well, it kind of links into Gartner's hype cycle, but just AI generally. I mean,
right.
You go back to a conference in, say, 2019 or 2018, 2019, even 2020, like AI was going to solve the world. AI chatbots, AI review tools, AI this, AI that. And you've kind of seen less and less of that now. Or at least maybe they're marketing themselves slightly differently. Maybe they're marketing themselves as like analytics companies now or data-focused companies as opposed to like AI. And I just find that quite interesting because there was a massive hype. Everyone wanted to implement point solutions that looked at AI and stuff. And now a lot of the conversations I'm having, it's not really coming up. Although there are some people that are pretty progressive in thinking about what your AI strategy in the next, say, 5 or 10 years needs to look like. But I think if you do a bit of a search on kind of legal tech now, there's probably less people advertising AI enabled or, you know, insert AI something tech tool here. So I think
I was going to say maybe one of the benefits is that we don't have companies saying they have AI when really what they have is an advanced algorithm.
Okay. I think that's still happening. And we won't call them out, but I just think the I think maybe people are in that trough of disillusionment. I can't remember exactly where AI was put in the Gartner hype cycle. I think it was split into the different point solutions. But anyway, at least just from my perspective, it's definitely become less of a sexy thing.
Yeah, agreed. So my question, Alex, was do we agree with the list? I think you've already added something to the not hot list.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I think, look, some of the points I've are not things that are on my radar. So the whole sort of tech captives one, for example, is not something on my radar. Mm-hmm. Sort of overall it seems reasonable. One thing I do think is missing, and we definitely have talked about it many times on the podcast, is contract lifecycle management.
Yep.
It's just been such a focus of particularly the sort of investment space, but also so many so many startups and vendors in the space, and it's such a big market. I just think that's been very clearly hot of late, and I would say definitely in 2021 that's been hot. So I would add that.
It's an interesting point because I mean that list was made for, I guess, law firm focus, and we know that the CLM is definitely getting a lot more traction. At least there's a lot more people talking about it, and a lot more investment happening in the in-house kind of corporate department. And I'm just thinking. Mm-hmm. Why is that the case? Like, would law firms have less of a business case to implement contract lifecycle management? Could law firms offer contract lifecycle management as almost a service for in-house teams instead of teams implementing their own solutions? Interesting.
Mm. Yeah, I'm sort of resisting the urge to go down that rabbit hole without
CLMAAS, contract lifecycle management as a service.
Yeah.
Did I just coin something?
Think a couple of points that come to mind as you say that. So one is, I imagine at least some of the ALSPs would offer that kind of service.
Yeah.
So that's kind of one thing.
Yep.
And my sort of gut feels like it's adjacent to legal work, but it's not actual legal work, mm-hmm. right? The management, and which is part of the reason why I think contract lifecycle management itself, in a large organization, it straddles so many parts of the organization, not just a legal team, right? So it's to some degree, it's a tool of procurement or of sales, as well as legal. So yeah, it's not purely a legal issue. It's adjacent to legal.
I can see you peeking down that rabbit hole, Elliot.
That's right. All right. So that's probably enough on that. We've got our last piece of news.
Something
for you, Alex. So
what?
So Tinder for lawyers. So right, lawyer.me. LA, another one that's a bit hard to say. LAWR.me. A dating app, and it's for, and I quote, lawyers and the people who want to date them. So it was started by someone who until recently worked at Ashurst in London. And look, I've not used it, don't know much about it, to be honest. Think it's quite interesting. My question is, will it work? And look, the one thing I suppose that occurs to me when I think of something like this is I once heard a professional investor, like a sort of a venture capitalist, say that one thing that he is least impressed by is when someone says they're building something and it's like X but for Y. So in other words, like I'm building, a social network, but instead of being for everyone, it's for some small subset of people, right? Mm. And it strikes me that this is a bit like that. You could do this kind of thing with, Tinder or what's the other ones? Bumble or Match or whatever today.
Yep.
And you don't necessarily have to focus just on lawyers, right? That said, there are dating sites that operate for specific cultural groups or income levels. There's one called Sugar Daddy. and also there's a service like LinkedIn, right? Which is sort of Facebook, but for professionals. So I don't know. I mean, look, I don't know. My sort of gut feeling, I have a sort of a deeper concern, which is that I'm just not that sure. I'm not sure that many people want to date lawyers who aren't already lawyers. That's my concern. And I feel I can say that as a lawyer.
Yeah, that's really funny. Yeah, I just saw this and I thought it'd be a bit fun to kind of talk about. I haven't seen it really come up much actually since it first kind of made a bit of a splash, but I just thought it was quite funny. And you're right, there are like different apps for really like, or dating apps or any kind of niche you can kind of think about. And it would make sense that there's one for lawyers, but trust a lawyer to think about creating an app like this, because it's like, well, surely lawyers want to date other lawyers, or surely people want to date lawyers as a profession. I think that's really funny. I haven't tried it out.
No, me neither. I can't see myself ever trying it out, to be honest. But we should encourage our listeners to do it.
Not sponsored.
No, not sponsored. That's fine. Good. All right. Well, good chat, Alex. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Elliot. Bye.